First case for argument is Hernreiter versus CHA, Fair Housing Authority. Mr. Sapolsky.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jamie Sapolsky, and I represent Siegfried Hernreiter in this employment discrimination case. The district court granted summary judgment on all remaining counts of the pro se complaint, and on appeal, the plaintiff challenges that ruling as to two claims, the national origin and race discrimination claims. Specifically, plaintiff challenges his transfer from the investigator's position in August of 1996 and his termination by the CHA shortly thereafter. Siegfried Hernreiter was born in Germany and is a naturalized United States citizen. He worked, prior to his employment with the CHA, he worked in the banking industry in the Chicago area for about 20 years. And during that time, he earned a bachelor's degree with honors from DePaul University and obtained certification, accounting certificates as a CPA, as a certified fraud examiner, and as a certified internal auditor.
Mr. Sapolsky, let me ask you, I mean, as I understand this case, there are really the two aspects of it. There's his transfer back to the auditor group and the termination. And you've just reviewed Mr. Hernreiter's qualifications, which are very impressive, but it made me confused with respect to the termination point when you seem to be complaining that the CAP that he was given was somehow beyond his capabilities. It's the kind of thing supervisors normally would do, that it was a very sophisticated task, and that doesn't strike me as consistent with what you've just rehearsed as to background.
Judge, I think that what we're arguing is not that it was beyond his capabilities. I think, first of all, what we're arguing is that that Terubi Artis, who was then the plaintiff's supervisor, engineered a project that meant that the plaintiff was destined to fail. In other words, he set the standards, and in the brief we go through those standards, and they're rather amorphous. I mean, the project, when he gets into the corrective action plan, that is a 5-page or 6-page document that's quite extensive, but the goals that he's supposed to meet are very vague. And
I mean, I can certainly imagine creating a corrective action plan that is simply not possible for any human being to do. You know, in 3 days, review everything we've done for the last 15 years and write a 15-page report on each one of them. You know, there are some things that would just be completely infeasible, and so I understand your destined to fail argument. But you seem to be basing it very much on the subjectivity of the standards, and a lot of this is a fairly subjective area, and I'm not sure what other evidence you have that this CAP was so ambitious or so comprehensive or so something that it was in the destined to fail category.
Well, Judge, I think that there are two points that we're trying to make. First of all, it goes to the assignment that he got and what we've just been discussing, and it also the second element of it is the cap itself, but overarching both of those issues is the timeliness question. This was a person who spent almost 4 years in the CHA as an auditor, so I mean he's speaking from experience when he says it's unusual for an auditor to get this kind of an assignment as opposed to an auditor supervisor. But more importantly, the point is that the timing of it is makes it suspect. I mean, he went back to the auditing position approximately September 9th of 1996, and within a month, Odom had made the decision that he was going to terminate him. And what we're challenging is the fact that not only the sort of subjective and vague nature of the assignment, but when we turn to the cap, that it was rushed through. I mean, the cap was issued or assigned on the 2nd of October of 96. The next day and for the next 4 days, Terubi Artis was writing memoranda that criticized plaintiff's work. This is the day after he's placed on the 30-day cap. And he doesn't show that those memoranda to the plaintiff. He puts it in his personnel file, and plaintiff only sees it at the time that he's terminated. That's when he becomes aware of the criticism that Terubi Artis is leveling the day after, or a few days after, the cap is implemented.
So why is it that the CHA, when they bring an experienced auditor back to the auditing department, can't give this person of demanding assignment. That's before the cap, right? He comes back, they give him the assignment, and then he starts falling behind. Why don't you give people with experience and lots of training the hard work?
Judge, I don't think there's any problem with doing that, and I don't think that the plaintiff had any misgivings about that. But I think that what we're talking about is that the subjective nature of this, the fact that they had not given typically these assignments to the auditors. Granted, this was a person who we may say had more experience than the average auditor. But the point is that, again, if Terubiartis or the CHA is setting the standards, that may make it difficult or impossible to meet. The other side of that is the timeliness question of the assignment. At the start, plaintiff was complaining about the fact that the timeliness, that Terubiartis was demanding too much too fast. And in fact, 2 weeks into the assignment, Terubiartis was already complaining to the plaintiff that he was a week behind. And it was just 2 days after that Odom demanded that Terubiartis place
him. Are you complaining separately about his transfer back from investigations to auditing?
Yes, Judge.
That's a separate offense. Well, I'm troubled by that, the suggestion that represents an adverse personnel action. I mean, granted, he preferred the investigator's job, but is that enough to make a lateral transfer adverse?
Yes, Judge, we think it is.
Then there's no standard. Then any personnel action of which a person complains. I mean, what if they took his car? What if they took his car away and replaced it with another car they didn't like as much?
Well, Judge, I think that's a bit removed from what we're talking about. First of all,
What's the standard?
Odom did take the car, but that's something separate.
From what? I thought that was part of your argument.
Well, it is part of the argument, Judge. But what we're talking about when we turn to the materiality of the transfer is, I mean, this court has broadly, quite broadly, I think is the term that's been used, defined the term adverse employment action. And certainly when we turn to, and I point out, first of all, that it is a question of fact, and I believe the decision that you wrote, Judge, that if it's not fairly contestable, then it's not appropriate for summary judgment, and we believe it is fairly contestable. And the reason is because the reassignment from investigator to auditor meant significantly different job responsibilities than the ones he had as an investigator.
Well, so now you're defining adverse as significantly different.
Well,
that the change in pay is the most important adverse job action that someone can take.
Yes, Judge.
No change in pay.
That's correct, and that's the issue that the district court focused on. But I think that's too narrow under this court's precedent. Certainly, obvious and obvious job actions like terminations, reductions in pay, those are materially adverse. But it doesn't. This court has said that lateral transfers, even those that do not diminish pay or benefits, can be materially adverse. And they are if the transfer works a substantial change in the terms and conditions of employment. And that was done.
That's just words.
Well, that was done here, Judge. I mean, it was done here from
the
standpoint.
That's just words when you say substantial change. Surely it has to be substantial diminution, not just change. Otherwise, a promotion would be actionable.
Well, Judge, I think that the
Serious non-pay, non-benefits, non-pecuniary adversity that we have identified is where the transfer somehow disrupts a person's career opportunities. You're moved into a dead-end job. You lose. You don't have responsibilities that are important to your career advancement. But that isn't true here. An auditor's job is just as important as an investigator's. I mean, accountants are as important as policemen, so.
That's correct, Judge.
It's just a job he happened not to care for as much.
That's true, and that's not inconsequential.
I don't think that's enough.
Well, we're not saying that's enough, Judge, but that is part of the analysis.
What's the rest of it?
The rest of it is that there was a substantial change in his job responsibilities.
I know there's a change, but there's no diminution. But all you're saying is if the job description changes and the employee doesn't like it, it's an adverse personnel action.
What we're asking this court to determine, Judge,
what if you're an executive for one of these companies that moves you all around the world every 2 years? You might not want it be sent to Timbuktu, but, you know, that's just the way the company works.
Judge, in one of your cases, I think, at Williams v. Bristol-Myers, there was a case of strict lateral transfer or purely lateral transfer. The man, the plaintiff, was a pharmaceutical salesman in his old position. He moved to the new division. He was a pharmaceutical salesman there. He worked the same territories. He even sold to the same doctors. The only difference was he sold different drugs. That is a strictly lateral transfer. The guy's a salesman, and he continues to be a salesman. This is different, and it's different.
Yeah, he told drugs he didn't know anything about, and he wasn't going to do as well in his commissions.
Well,
this person is being moved back to his original job.
Judge, again, what we're asking this court to determine is whether substantial change in the job responsibilities is a
saying substantial change, but certainly we're not going to adopt a rule which says a substantial change is always adverse.
No, Judge, because it could benefit the employee, and obviously it wouldn't be adverse then. You know, you talked a moment ago about a promotion. Well, that is going to presumably mean a substantial change in job responsibilities, but it's not adverse to the plaintiff.
But what you are arguing for is a plaintiff's viewpoint, in a sense, that a lateral transfer to a job that the plaintiff subjectively finds less satisfying, and perhaps you might throw in that the employer knows the plaintiff will find less satisfying, is automatically adverse. And like Judge Posner, I can't find that anywhere in our cases. The cases I thought you were trying to analogize to were the ones where the person winds up down in the basement, you know, with no telephone and no light and all of these things, you know, shuffling papers around all day. And those, even if you still get the same pay and you still have the same job title, easy enough to see that the actual terms and conditions of employment have diminished. But I don't see how going from one type of job to another, where employers may have lots of good reasons to keep people trained in different areas of their operation, thinking more broadly, you know, like as to what rule of law we're supposed to adopt, I don't see why this kind of change is adverse either.
Judge, the Collins decision gets to the first part, I think, of your question. And there the court analyzed whether, I mean, the first issue that the court took up in dealing with this materiality question was, what did the plaintiff think about it? And in Collins, the plaintiff did not like the change, and that's the first thing that the court keyed on. So I think that it's not the be-all and end-all, but it does bear on the question of whether we're dealing with a material adverse employment action. Does the plaintiff deem it to be so? And I think if not, then that doesn't get to the question that we're trying to tease out. But I think that what we're talking about ultimately is whether the terms and conditions of employment have changed. And what we're in this case, they have changed, and they changed because what he did as an investigator is not what he's doing now as an auditor.
Well, of course, the phrase isn't have they changed. Is there an adverse employment action? So you need to show they've changed for the worse.
Yes, Judge. And that's our contention. Again, that's the issue that we're presenting to the court.
So you're arguing any lateral transfer that the plaintiff doesn't like is that creates a jury issue. He just says he didn't like it. It was a lateral transfer. He didn't like it. That's enough.
No, Judge. This court has also said that mere alterations of job duties or descriptions is not going to be sufficient to reach the materiality.
That's not a lateral transfer.
I'm sorry, Judge.
That's not a lateral transfer.
Well, I think in the context
the description of his job without changing his job.
Yes.
So what's your idea of a lateral transfer that would not create a?
Well, the plaintiff in Williams was a lateral transfer that would not create a materially adverse employment action. And that was a person who went from setting aside the issue of, because when you talk about the fact that he was selling new drugs, he didn't know them as well, he had to get up to speed about them, that might reduce his ability to sell. The issue is he was a salesman before, he's a salesman now, he's even in the same
term. I'm asking you for a different example of lateral transfer that is not actionable.
Again, Judge, if somebody is transferred from, you could say he was transferred, he was in the auditing department, and he's transferred now somewhere else, transferred to the investigator's department, in this case, but is still an auditor there. I think that would be a case where there's a lateral transfer, the pay and benefits remain the same, but he's doing the same work. Give my time's up.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chakovsky. Mr. Isbell?
May it please the court, my name is Gregory Isbell. I represent the Chicago Housing Authority, the appellee in this matter. Before addressing the points raised by counsel, it's important to note that Mr. Hernreiter is not appealing two parts of the district court's opinion. First, he's not appealing summary judgment on his harassment claim, nor is he appealing summary judgment on his retaliation claim.
Is the fact that he's not appealing summary judgment on the harassment claim something that you think also precludes us from looking to the remarks that are made that are negative about Germans, that, what's his name,
Mr. Odom?
No, Mr. Turobiartis had made. Isn't he the one who was talking about the fact that he didn't like foreigners and saying Yavol all the time?
Your Honor, correct. It does not preclude this court from looking at those comments, Your Honor. It was Mr. Odom who purportedly said Yavol on a number of occasions, and Mr. Turobiartis who said something about foreigners. That went back over a year before his termination. Those are really the only comments that are in the record, Your Honor, and they are very much disassociated with the ultimate termination decision. They're straight comments in the workplace, and there's really no connection between those comments and his ultimate termination. Now, Mr. Hernreiter would like this court to believe that his reassignment and his termination were all part of one big conspiracy. But as for his termination, the issues here are relatively straightforward. He has really two theories on his termination. The first theory is that he was set up to fail by being given an assignment that was too onerous.
Now, don't you agree that there could be a case where somebody's given an assignment that is, in fact, structured to make sure that the person fails? You know, somebody gives you the assignment, you know, summarize every case in the U.S. reports from 1 through 534 and give me the memo next Tuesday. That's really just too much to do in a week, and so you're not going to be able to do it.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, of course, then you fail, and they say, well, we're firing you because you didn't do it.
Yes, Your Honor, that could certainly be a viable theory. But the main problem here is that he admitted at his deposition that he was capable. He called drafting an audit plan basic auditing 101 in his deposition, Your Honor.
The particular plan he was asked to do when he returned?
Yes, Your Honor. As far as the idea was to draft a general audit plan to test whether or not the previous audits from that year, the previous 9 months, had been implemented properly. He was asked to draft a plan and to implement the plan. He called that basic auditing 101, Your Honor.
So 9 months worth of audits, and that, because they were criticizing him for his timeliness, not for whether he was drafting the plan properly or not. How many audits are we talking about?
I don't know how many audits there were, Your Honor, but he was criticized for being slow to draft the plan and being slow to implement the plan as well. There were certain timelines, and he was certainly not expected to do that within a matter of hours or days.
A lot of things that are very fishy about this. For example, his positive performance review when he was in the investigators department, which I've looked at because it's in the record, and there's nothing at all on that form or any of the other forms that suggests these are projecting what somebody's performance is going to be like for the coming year. They purport to evaluate existing performance, and yet the CHA has said, oh, well, the only reason we gave him a 3.96 is because we thought he had potential to be good. Well, that just seems contradictory, and the more contradictions that come into this record, the fishier it sounds.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that the supervisors quibbled with the fact that he was a hard worker who wanted to be an investigator.
But why did they give him a 3.96? Did that, in your view, represent their evaluation of the work he had been doing as an investigator up to that moment? And if not, what scrap of evidence in the record is there to show that when the CHA does performance reviews, it's not really reviewing, it's projecting?
Well, it was an element of both, Your Honor. It was an element of the fact that
what's your evidence?
The evidence was that he received a 2 in the one critical...
On one column, if you go through all those pages of that performance review, there are a bunch of 5s, there are a lot of 4s, and there's 1, 2, which averages into it.
Your Honor, that was, in the minds of his supervisors, and especially the new Inspector General, Mr. Odom, critical, because he was failing to follow instructions.
How do we know that? I mean, why have the average number then? It seems to me, at the very least, this is a contestable issue.
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Odom viewed this stint as an investigator as basically as a tryout. Every other investigator was a former Chicago police officer or a former Treasury agent. Mr. Odom himself was a former Treasury agent. He thought he would try an auditor as an investigator to help out with financial investigations. He tried it for several months. It didn't work out. Mr. Hernreiter did not follow instructions. Now, as a criminal investigator, it was vile for him to do that. He would otherwise trample on witnesses' rights or perhaps violate the integrity of an investigation. So basically, it was a failed experiment or a failed tryout. But the Mr. Odom, transferring back and back to a place where he was trained and was purportedly capable, was the common sense way to go, Your Honor.
Well, he contests those points about whether he was ever given these instructions that he supposedly failed to follow.
He does contest, Your Honor, to some extent. However, he doesn't really put forth any specific evidence. As a matter of fact,
what does he need to say other than no one ever said this to me? Is that, in your view, incompetent evidence?
Well, there is one piece of evidence, Your Honor, that is very illuminating. He, at his deposition, we were discussing the fact that he was told to go interview people in person, and he didn't do that. He admits that he didn't do that because he, quote, felt that my time could be used more wisely and more efficiently by doing it my way. That's what rubbed Mr. Odom the wrong way. When he came in and he wanted criminal investigators to do investigations by the letter of the law, and when he had someone who was untrained tell him he could do it his way, that was the reason for the transfer. And again, I think we should actually think of it more as a reassignment, Your Honor. It was not a transfer from department to department. This was merely within the same office, a reassignment from a job he had been doing and had been trained to do to a job that he was no longer, back to his original job as well.
Well, my point was just that there's a fair amount in this record of flipping and flopping on the CHA's part, the reasons given for various actions. And so if you take that up to the point of the assignment he gets when he's transferred back into auditing, because as I say, I have a hard time seeing the transfer itself is a problem, but a termination is certainly an adverse job action.
Yes, Your Honor.
You could possibly argue with that. So if he's terminated, then one wants to know whether there's evidence in the record to suggest the stated reasons for that termination are pretextual.
Well, Your Honor, the one change that I think you may be alluding to is the idea that Mr. Hernreiter focused on, that a poor mark in communications is different from not following instructions. But really, Your Honor, there really are two elements or two sides of the same coin. So I would argue that that is not a change in the CHA story that would show pretext. Now, we also should look at the fact that the common actor presumption should apply here. Mr. Odom came here in March of 1996. He was told by his boss, the executive director, Joseph Schuldiner, that Mr. Hernreiter's transfer was still pending. Mr. Odom consulted with his chief investigator, Jerry Howard, and decided to go ahead and to allow that transfer to take place, to ratify that transfer. So now we have a new head of the department who has no reason to suddenly, 4 or 5 months down the road, decide that he doesn't want white investigators around, or even white employees around.
Well, of course, he might just know more now. He's new, and I gather there's a lot of messiness about which date is important and when, in fact, this really happened. But it could well be that at the beginning he would just say, I don't know anything about this. Go ahead and do what you're going to do. Now he knows something. So I'm not sure that this is a good – I'm skeptical about this common actor presumption anyway, but assuming there is one, this may not be the best candidate for it.
Well, Your Honor, he did, in fact, learn more, Your Honor. He learned, in fact, that Mr. Odom learned that Mr. Hernreiter was not a capable investigator, and he also learned that once he went...
Quite old five that he got in this report.
Well, he was potentially a capable employee, Your Honor. He was a hard worker before all these issues arose, and he was trying hard, and he was pushing hard. The problem was that he was pushing in the wrong direction and stubbornly not doing what he was being asked to do.
Why wasn't the whole evaluation then like the other man's, a three or something?
Well, Your Honor, the other person who I think Your Honor is referring to was eventually, within a few weeks after Mr. Hernreiter, forced to resign.
Right, and so when you saw somebody was performing badly as an investigator, you knew how to signal that.
Well, the the African-American employee who was behaving as a poor employee, Your Honor, was forced to resign shortly thereafter. For Mr. Hernreiter, it's hard to compare him. He had another place to go. He could very easily be reassigned back to his auditing position. An investigator who really only had skills as an investigator was doing a poor job, but only had one place to go, and that was termination. So it's hard to compare the fact that the African-American employee wasn't terminated as quickly as Mr. Hernreiter was reassigned because of the different scenarios, the different context of those actions. Now, as far as any animus by Mr. Odom, the new Inspector General, again, Mr. Hernreiter has tried to show the idea that there's some confusion about who replaced him, that he was replaced by an African-American employee. But it is undisputed that after two investigators were dismissed from being investigators, Mr. Hernreiter was reassigned. The other was forced to resign. Two investigators were hired, one African-American and one white employee.
2 months apart.
2 months apart, Your Honor, but both within a short time these disputed events. So I think that's hard for any confusion to show any racial animus on the part of Mr. Odom. As a matter of fact, by the end of 1996, it was a more racially diverse place than when he came there in March of 1996. When he came there in March of 1996, there were no white investigators other than Mr. Hernreiter who came in under his watch.
And when he left, and when Odom left, or when the end of the record, how many whites were there?
By the end of 1996, Your Honor, there were at least one, perhaps two investigators. I'm not sure if I have that before me, Your Honor.
Out of how many?
Out of approximately 7 or 8, Your Honor.
7 or 8?
Yes. Yeah. Now, once he was put on that cap, he does not contest the fact that he failed to meet the cap. The record shows that he repeatedly fell behind schedule and that he was pointed out certain errors and failed to correct those errors. For instance, there are drafts of one report in the record where he relied on the assurance of an auditee that certain actions were being done. Mr. Tourbillard has pointed out every single time, as an auditor, you don't rely on someone's assurance. You check it out yourself. And Mr. Hernreiter, each time failed to correct that mistake. He also was told to go out and interview people, to do field work. Well, he wanted to do field work. Well, this was the chance. Do field work. Go interview your auditee. He didn't do it. He even admitted at his deposition that he, quote, probably gave up after being put on the cap. This is the situation we have, Your Honor, with someone given an onerous job. He could do the job, but he ultimately gave up. In essence, Mr. Hernreiter is really trapped by his own argument because in regard to his transfer, he contends that he was a fine investigator who was very capable of doing the job, despite the fact he had no training as an investigator. But in regard to his ultimate termination, now he contends he was a journeyman employee who really could not do a complex auditing assignment. Well, that he's a trained auditor. That is really a trap in his own argument. In the end, he was simply a disgruntled employee who essentially quit working after he was involuntarily transferred. He was assigned a job he was capable of doing and did a demonstrably poor job. He was instructed on how to improve and warned he could be terminated. He failed to improve and was terminated as a result. Now, in turning to the issue that this court addressed with Mr. Sapolsky, the original reassignment was not even an adverse action. He was asked at his deposition whether or not being an investigator was a promotion, and all he could respond with was, well, it was more enjoyable for me. I enjoyed doing investigations. I enjoyed working with these people. That is not enough evidence, Your Honor. The only concrete, tangible reasons he's able to come up with for being an adverse action was that he lost a car, and he liked doing field work as an investigator, and he did not sign in and out of the office. These are not the kind of significant qualitative changes that trigger federal anti-discrimination laws. Turning briefly to the common actor presumption, I just want to clear up one issue here. As I said before, Mr. Odom met with his boss, Mr. Schuldiner, when he came in March of 1996, and he was told this transfer is still pending. Mr. Hernreiter has no evidence to contradict that story, that Mr. Schuldiner told him that this transfer is still pending. Therefore, it was up to Mr. Odom to ratify that transfer.
And so the typed date on the transfer form is to be disregarded?
It's not to be disregarded, Your Honor.
It says effective date. There's a box. It says effective date, 1/23-something.
Correct, Your Honor. I see that my time is up, but let me
stress.
Ultimately, you can see on that form that it was processed in March and April. Although the effective date was, in fact, backdated, Your Honor, to January of 1996, it was clearly not processed by the HR people until March and April. There are about 5 or 6 dates after Mr. Odom signed it where it was processed through the system only after Mr. Odom's signature. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Isbell. Mr. Sapolsky, how much time do you have? 1 minute?
Just one point on the common actor presumption. The effective date was January 8th. The document, the MPAR, was approved by Martin Mellinger. It was approved by the then Inspector General, Mr. Holton. Sharon Boyd testified that Holton had the authority to make that transfer effective, and plaintiff worked at that job as an investigator for 2.5 months before Odom arrived on the scene in late March. One point on the change in the reasons for the transfer. Contrary to what counsel said, the reason originally given by Odom was plaintiff's lack of law enforcement background. Now they're claiming that he was insubordinate, Odom is claiming that, and that's the reason for the transfer.
Now, is it your position that if he had never become an investigator, if he'd remained in the audit department, he would have been fired anyway?
Judge, I have no way of knowing that. I just know that the sequence that has gone through. Actually, the plaintiff didn't work for...
I don't understand you. Your whole case is that they wanted to get rid of him because he was white or because he was German or something. So what difference would it have made whether he was transferred or not?
All I know, Judge, is that the changes to plaintiff's employment at the CHA began occurring when Odom entered the picture. And
all right, so why isn't it your proposition that since Odom didn't want to have any whites or any Germans or something, that it didn't make any difference that he was transferred to the investigation job? If he'd remained as an auditor, he still would have been, you know, given impossible assignments and forced out that way.
Again, Judge, I can't answer that question.
Well, I don't know how you can have a case then.
I'm sorry?
I don't understand what your case is then.
Because the fact is that he was transferred, Judge. He was made an investigator.
But it doesn't make any difference because your whole argument is that he was fired as an auditor because he was German. So what difference does it make whether he'd been transferred in the interim to another division?
Well, Judge, the record is, there's nothing in the record as to what the racial composition of either of those departments is now. I have no idea of knowing whether
doesn't help your case at all. You don't know how many whites there were in the auditing department?
They were principally white, Judge, in the auditing department. And
they were
black.
They were principally white, but Odom, they were black, the investigators were black, the auditors were white. And so Odom is, what is this game he's playing? I don't understand you.
Again, Judge,
what's he trying to accomplish?
I can't speculate on what he might have been trying to accomplish.
But you're arguing that this is racial discrimination. Now you say you don't have any idea what Odom was after.
Because, Judge, you changed the facts. I mean, what happened was
you tell me, what is your conception of Odom's goal?
In this case, Odom's goal was to terminate the plaintiff.
Why?
Based on an impermissible reason, his race or his ethnic background.
Then why is it that you're so resistant to the suggestion that if he hadn't been transferred into the investigations division, he still would have been fired because he still would have been German?
Well, Judge, I can answer the question and say yes, but I don't know for a fact. I don't know why.
Fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel.